When the federal earthquake hit Chicago City Hall the other day, things were quiet along the Chicago Way. It seemed like nothing had changed. Payrollers walked in and out City Hall to lunch, or they grabbed smokes on Clark Street. And across the way, the German market was busy with the bratwurst and the kraut. Cops outside the Daily Center there at the market were still trying to keep people from stealing the baby Jesus in the creche. "Jesus is strapped down now," said a cop, "although I caught a drunk kid yesterday trying to steal him at 6 o'clock in the morning." But if you knew what to look for, you could feel that earthquake trembling. You could feel it in the voices of the powerful alderman's friends, in the silent moves being made, calculations about who would take power in the city council, and those plates under the surface of power, like the plates of the earth, beginning to shift. Because the feds had seized the offices of powerful alderman Edward Burke, 50 years an alderman, with bodyguards and suits and that white hair. He exudes power. And his wife, Anne, justice of the Illinois Supreme Court, Chicago's power couple. Mayors Byrne, Washington, Sawyer, and Daley and Emanuel had tested him, and they lost. You think Burke is just an alderman? Just another multimillionaire real estate tax lawyer like his friend Boss Madigan? You think he's just a guy who plays piano and sings show tunes at political parties? Ed Burke's all those things and more. But if you really want an accurate picture, think of him as an intelligence service, wired with whisperers and sparrows in all parts of government and politics, and they all swoop back to sing their songs to him, because he knows the secrets of political intrigue. The knowledge is power. And now the feds go after him. They move to take him down. He's already going to have a tough aldermanic campaign. His ward is largely Latino now. And so the feds coming and seizing records out of your office is like cutting your leg and bleeding into the water, swimming over a coral reef with sharks on the other side. And a city full of consultants and their business bosses and intriguers want to know, will he withstand it? Or will there be a new chairman of the city council finance committee that they're going to have to deal with? Because this is all about money and juice. Up until the other day, Burke was at the center of this web, this intelligence web, like some great white-haired spider, feeling every tremor. Although now the tremors run through him. We've got plenty to discuss today. I was at City Hall, sitting outside Ed Burke's office, like Carol Marin and Bill Cameron, Fran Spielman. We all told our Burke stories, our alderman stories, like the one about the alderman who was naked on the bed and she rubbed $50 bills on her body and then got indicted. But I also talked to Alderman Joseph Moore from the North Side about Burke as the feds took their record. And there's a secret about Netflix I've got to tell you. I can't be trusted to watch Netflix shows alone, like The Last Kingdom. It's my weakness. There's a story I should tell about the sea, many years ago, when I was a boy and on a different path, and I thought that one would leave me to having my own ship, my own command. Jeff Carlin is in the WGN studio editing this, and he's working as executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And you know where you are, with political power in the balance, an election about to get here any day, and the records of Ed Burke seized by the FBI. Where are you? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Okay, what are we going to talk about? Well, it's not going to be about something important like the mayor's race, because I'm going to write about that. And, you know, I don't give everything away for free. This is the Chicago way. That means you've got to pay for something, right? And my mayoral campaign is doing just fine. It's all about taxes for you and corruption and wealth for me. It's the Chicago way, and it'll work because I'm honest and I shall be elected. But in the meantime, I've discovered something about myself that I probably should confess. It's that I'm completely irresponsible when it comes to television, particularly Netflix, particularly a show called The Last Kingdom. Now, if you watch Netflix, you know that they drop all their shows on one day. So I started watching a show called The Last Kingdom about Vikings, hot witches, heroes. I just needed some, you know, some popcorn for my brain to cleanse it from all these sordid details of political life. And so I started watching the show about this young guy. He's a hero. He's born Christian. He's raised by the Danes who kill his father, but then he kind of likes them. And he goes on from there to avenge his father and become a sort of knight, I guess, gets baptized or is baptized, but then goes to the Danes. It's all pretty good. And it's violent and there's sexual activity. So, you know, you should know that going forward, but I like it. It's kind of a holding show. I hear this is called a hold show. I'm still waiting for Game of Thrones, which will come out in, I guess, sometime before I'm dead. But The Last Kingdom, here's the problem. They drop all the shows at once. And as soon as one show ends, it loads another show on Netflix. So the other day I was watching season 2. We were all supposed to watch together as a family. You know, only two. We're only going to watch 2 episodes a day. That was the rule. The boys put that rule in. And Betty agreed with it. But I was home and everyone was out. It was a Saturday during the Thanksgiving break. And I ended up sitting on my butt for 8 hours watching TV. I couldn't get up. I mean, I got up to get some fresh air and take care of personal business for a few minutes and then rush back. I think the snacks were a really good salami. Really good killer salami made of boar and a decent red wine and some crackers. Yeah. And I sat there all day eating my salami, munching my crackers, drinking my wine, watching the king, Uhtred, son of Uhtred, and the saga of the Vikings in England in the 9th century. And I realized that I can't watch Netflix without adult supervision. I've got to have someone there because if I get hooked on a show, I just cannot get up. I have to watch the next one and the next one and the next one. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of brain gluttony. My physical gluttony is that I've eaten salami and crackers all day. But my brain gluttony is fill my brain with the Saxon stories of Uhtred, son of Uhtred. Here's one thing, though. There was one thing I got to share with you, and I'm not spoiling it, but I thought it was pretty good. I mean, look, it's not a great cinema. It's not the great, it's not Ingmar Bergman. Nobody's playing chess with death, although that was a good scene. But there was a scene in it where the Lord of Mercia, which is the kingdom threatened by the Danes, he just basically gets upset with the servant and stabs him. Yeah, bosses could do that in those days. They could just stab you if they felt like it. So he stabs the guy and quietly wipes the blade on the dead man's coat as he's lying there in the mud. And his trusted aide comes up and says, "Lord, you simply cannot execute your subjects as you please. This is the 9th century, after all." And I started laughing my butt off. Okay, I'm laughing like a maniac at a weird kind of out. It should have been an outtake. I can just imagine the actor who delivered it laughing after he said so, and all of them laughing in the crew, and I was laughing. And I'm alone in the room. My kids walk in. They're like, "What are you doing? Binge watching?" I felt kind of guilty. So, and weird. So from now on, I can only watch Netflix shows with an adult in the room. That's the rule of the house.
Monster of the ass, quick to catch your eye. Never once a passer by the passing by. Servant to the poor, banner to the great. Comfort the philosopher a night-long night. Everybody's boon companion.
Okay, we're talking to Alderman Joe Moore, who grew up in Oak Lawn with me.
That's right.
After our families moved out, and then he became a North Sider. Joe, today...
He became a West Sider, right?
Right, right. I guess now you call it that. Joe, Ed Burke, feds, paper on the windows, Annie Burke doing her swearing in quietly in her office this morning. How's this affecting the council?
Well, clearly... Ed is a giant in the city council, and
smart.
And it was it was a surprise that it happened this close to the election. My understanding is usually the feds take a holiday before election, kind of along the lines of what Mueller did before the November midterms.
So, whether or not anything comes of this, we don't know.
We don't know. But politically, this has happened before. Yeah.
But politically, coming close to the election, as you mentioned, he's already weak. He's got not the best ward map anymore. There are people pushing him. There was some thought that, you know, he couldn't even win. He might lose, and then this happens. Ward race, how does something like this affect the ward?
No one wants to have the FBI come visit you. If you're looking at it just from through a political lens,
yes,
this could actually be beneficial to Alderman Burke.
How so?
Well, there is a natural distrust of the federal government right now in the Latino community. Ed has been very vocal in opposition to ICE and some of the other measures that the federal government has taken down to crack down against undocumented residents in the United States, and he could easily make an argument that this is federal government punishing him for being outspoken on behalf of his constituents.
At least that's the argument he would make.
That's the argument. That's certainly the argument that he would make, I would imagine.
But in the council, with Danny Solis going, and I guess Pat not going and coming back, there's got to be some, I don't know, calculations on this with respect to this already. I mean, you've only been in this game 30 plus years, right?
Well, don't age me prematurely.
Well, you know,
27 years.
We were both kids in the last century,
yeah.
You know. But
yeah,
they've got
been around
be
a long time.
They've got to be thinking, okay, if he doesn't, this hurts him. Do I make my move? Who's going to be the finance chairman? Right?
Yeah. Well, that's all very premature because all of us have to stand for election in February, and we don't know if anything will come of this.
Right.
You know. There are other elected officials that we know of who've had raids conducted against them, and they're still in office right now.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. There are other raids that other people that have had this issue. Burke does not breed goats, though. He does. he does real estate tax law.
He does,
and the workman's comp.
He does.
Is that what the speculation is, workman's comp on this deal?
Well, that that could be one. That was where, there were federal subpoenas issued about 5 years ago against his files on regarding workers' comp. So maybe it has something to do with that. That was quite a while ago, but who knows? We can only speculate.
What is your relationship with him now? Because when we started in this thing, you as an alderman, me as a reporter, you were on the outs of the regulars, And now you've sort of not that you're a regular or anything, but you're more of, I don't know how to characterize it without, I don't want to.
Well, if you look at the issues and stay away from the personalities,
right.
I'm to every bit as a political progressive as
yes,
I was
of course.
When I was elected back in 1991. But you know, mayors have changed and the political dynamics have changed. And, you know, Ed and I, you know, have a different approach to politics.
Yes.
But even during the days when we were in most disagreement, we still had a cordial relationship. You know, I believe in working with everyone, even with people I disagree with.
Last question, Alderman. The years ago, I would comment that when the feds came here, they always got some two-bit loser, you know, who's grabbing. I mean, some cheap grab, right?
Yeah.
A greasy envelope full of 50s. This is not that. So it's significant, isn't it?
Well, it is significant. And also, I'm sure whatever they're investigating is probably a lot more complicated. And it will take time. So I doubt we'll see any outcome of this in the near future.
But it won't affect, or is it affecting the council right now? In other words,
in your talks with
the aldermen.
I think we're all concentrating on our reelection, and then we'll see how the council shakes up after that.
It's good to be the king.
You know how my day begins? Every day. I wake up about 5:30, I find the column on the internet, the Tribune, and I post it on social media, on my Twitter account, @John_Cass, and on the two Facebook pages. And many of you go to those pages and we talk about the column. And I have my coffee in the morning and say goodbye to the kids and Betty, and if I'm not going downtown, I stay here. And one of the entries to a recent column, it was about immigration and the lack of solutions from the left and from Democrats, was a guy named Jeffrey Savoy. And he was talking about how when he was a kid working on farms, he walked bean fields. At home, we were walking beans, if no other reason than the family was out there, so you were brought along. And he talked about tough jobs that he had, like working in a grain elevator. He said, there's nothing more brutal. And that triggered something in me. I used the word trigger. Do you believe that? Cass used the word trigger. But it did. And I responded on Facebook that I worked on a ship carrying grain from New Orleans to Nigeria. I didn't know then that I was allergic to grain dust. And that changed my life. And it did. And now I'm looking out at the backyard, the snow, on the ground. It'll all be melting soon. Dibs will be over. Yeah, remember Dibs? It'll be over. I've already announced it. Judge Dibs looked at the Dibsitution and said it's done. But I'm looking out at that snow and thinking of a different place. A different place in my life. You know, they say you have many lives, or at least two, the one you start with and the one you live with after you're broken. And you mend yourself and you keep going. And that happened to me when I was 19. I was working on that ship, a Liberty ship. Must have been 50, 60 years old. Top speed, 11 knots, with five giant cargo holds. And in the cargo holds, basically they were like huge boxes on the deck of the ship going down about two stories. You needed long ladders to go down all the way. And in the middle of each hold was a place where you'd set I-beams on the lip at halfway point. I-beams would be set in to keep the thing, you know, because they're boxes. You need to stabilize the ship, keep structural integrity. And then on the top, you'd put more I-beams and boards, heavy boards about 4 feet long, about 2 feet wide, 3 feet wide. And you'd run those up the lips of the I-beam. And there were a lot of boards. I'm saying this was manual labor, heavy manual labor. And once you set those in, and if you didn't get killed falling off the I-beam and with somebody operating the winch, you batten it down by covering it with three layers of tarp and tying it down and using wedges to tighten, and then more rope and more knots. And that's how we worked. It was my dream at the time to be captain of a ship like that, or hopefully a newer one. I was not an officer at the beginning, but I was a student of engineering at the University of Illinois. On my off hours, I'd learn about charts and courses and the stars and navigation and operations, and I was doing pretty well. I loved it. The ship's owners came to meet their ship, actually. We met, where was it? In Spain, or I don't remember now. Maybe Trinidad. And they told me that they were setting me up to join the Greek Merchant Marine Academy, and that I would work for them when I was done. And my whole life was stretched out before me the way I wanted it. Someday to be, you know, to be an officer if I did well and be a, and move up the ranks and one day have my own ship. You'd have never heard from me. You'd have never seen my name. I wouldn't have a podcast on the bridge of a ship. I wouldn't be writing this column. You wouldn't have known that I wanted to run for mayor or that I was Judge Dibbs. You wouldn't, that, all that would have changed, like a different life. And it changed radically for me when we loaded grain in New Orleans and I became sick with the grain dust. And that's how columns work. Jeffrey Savoy talking about working in a grain elevator. I respond. And now I'm thinking about that ship and that different life I had. So what? To make a long story short, I was very allergic to the grain. When we finally got it loaded, I spent most of my time outside in the wind. And I started feeling a little better. It took us 40 days from New Orleans to the River Benin in Nigeria and going up the River Benin to a town called Koko, a little village. 40 days because we were heavy with grain and we were trying to dodge storms, basically. So it took a long time. We burned a lot of fuel. We finally made it into the river, and what could you see? The oil fires from the oil rigs, they're burning off gas in the low sky. It was rainy season in Africa and it was hot. And I mean hot like you think it's hot in Chicago? Try equatorial Africa. I think it's on the equator. It's hot there. I mean, so we unload the ship. We're going to unload the cargo, big vacuums, dumping grain, sucking up the grain. Have I ever told you this story? I don't think so. I got sick again, and it was worse. And my breathing passages closed. They took me to the hospital, a hospital in Warri, Nigeria. Warri. A few miles away. And there, they mainlined me with adrenaline every day. I'd been a ball player. I was still in good shape, so I didn't kick off of a heart attack, and I got through it. But one thing happened. the captain and the first mate came to see me in the hospital. My crew had come to see me. I was all ready to, you know, like, hey, when I'm, you're still here? I'm going to get back on that ship. But they told me that I was going home. That my allergy prevented me from working on ship anymore. And Lloyd's of London would cancel my insurance. And there I was, 19. It wasn't a good day. My crew came by to see me and say goodbye. And I gave, they brought my duffel bag with all my work clothes that they had washed and ironed. We didn't have any. All we had were buckets and detergent, and you wash your stuff by hand. But they washed it all and they pressed it. And I started giving things away because I didn't want to, you know, get emotional. And, but if you've ever been in the military or on a, with a crew, you go through a lot of things. Living so close together in bad storms and good times, in fights and visiting ports. And you become like brothers. You do. I mean, we weren't in combat, but we were fighting the sea together. So I gave my knife to my friend Yanni. He was the first mate. And I wore overalls sometimes at work. Blue jean overalls. They were perfect. And I gave those and my boots to Costa, another good friend of mine. He was a commando in the Greek army. Married with two kids, trying to, you know, do a job and send his money home. And there was a electrician's mate. He looked like, if you saw him, you'd think this barbarian would kill you. He was tough, and his face looked like a piece of beef with a nose on it. And his eyes were all scarred because he had been a fighter, and his arms were really long, like almost touching the ground. But he loved to read. He loved to read the Russians. He loved Dostoevsky, and I had a copy. And I had a copy of Solzhenitsyn's book, too. And I gave him those, and he got kind of emotional. We're all sitting around drinking tea, and then it was time for them to leave. See you, boys. See you in America. Look me up. The next day, they were gone. I knew what they were doing. They were loading, they had unloaded the ship finally. They had done reloaded some other cargo. Somebody was down in the hold helping pull up the anchor chain. Guiding it back into the hold. There were guys pulling ropes on the deck. The captain would be calling out his commands, and the ship's, the pilot that would come from the port would be calling out commands as well. Left rudder, 2 degrees, right rudder, 4 degrees, that sort of thing. And they got out into the river and they were gone. And I was alone in Africa. My dream of being a captain was dead. If you can't get insurance to cover yourself, you will not be hired. I guess you wouldn't have heard anything from me. If it had worked out, you wouldn't have listened to the podcast. There wouldn't have been a podcast. Things change, and it wasn't my fault, and I felt broken, but eventually I found this thing. This thing that I do with you. Running a ship means a lot of people working together. Writing a column is doing your work alone. But you're with me here. When you read the column, you're with me. When you're on Facebook with me, we're talking. When you're listening to this podcast, we're together. I just want to tell you a story about how all this stuff interrelates. I guess it's all about keeping your antenna up. For a writer, keeping your antenna. Sometimes that's the part that hurts, because you'd rather pull it in and just watch The Last Kingdom, binge watch something on TV, chill out. Now I better get to my paying job, writing a column for the Tribune. And I know Jeff Carlin's back in the studio editing this, going, John, why didn't you tell some more stories of the sea? But I think that's enough for now. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune, who still today aches a little bit thinking about that story, about the life I had before this. Would have been a life at sea. And now it's a life at a keyboard and speaking into a microphone. And you've got your life, but we're all here together on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.